podcasting for the digital photographer.
Hey, this is Levin from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and you're listening to Tips from the Top Floor.
This is Tips from the Top Floor. And here's your host, Chris Marquardt.
Welcome to the third out of four interviews in succession. I've pre-recorded these interviews during the month of August 2005 in order to have something interesting on the show for my listeners during the month of September, which I'm actually spending on vacation, far away from the daily treadmill. Unfortunately, my being away also means that I won't be able to answer your emails or moderate all the comments on the website, so please hang in there. I'll be back in October. And in today's show, I'll be chatting about sports photography with professional extreme sports photographer Tony Donaldson at tdphoto.com. All right, and today I have Tony Donaldson on the show. He's a professional sports photographer based in Los Angeles. Hey, Tony.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for being on the show.
So, my pleasure.
Why don't you introduce yourself a bit?
I'm an extreme sports photographer. I've been shooting BMX, skateboarding, all those related sports for about 17 years now. I actually got my start doing those sports as a kid, as a participant, and had my own. I used to race BMX. I used to have my own freestyle team, and then just as a natural progression, when I got into photography in the late 80s, I started shooting those sports. My original mentor was an AP photographer, Associated Press, and took me under his wing and taught me how to shoot. And so I kind of started as a professional photographer. I actually didn't have a whole lot of normal amateur time. I picked up a camera and started shooting assignments for the Associated Press right away.
That's pretty cool. I mean, that's kind of a start that many people are dreaming of, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's luck, partly, and partly knowing, you know, somebody who worked for the Associated Press, so I could start work as a stringer right away, and he taught me the right way to shoot and that kind of thing, and then it sort of progressed from there. My love of the sports that I shoot sort of drew me to those and got me an early start, and then I had my second mentor, 9 months after I picked up a camera for the first time. I found myself with a job. I grew up in Illinois, and I found myself with a job in Los Angeles a few months later, and working for BMX Plus magazine. So my second mentor was John Carr, who's an amazing photographer of those types of sports.
So those types of sports, that's definitely not Olympic sports, right?
No, although I think BMX racing will be in the 2008 Olympics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you might get into taking pictures of the Olympics then.
Yeah. I've worked with a couple of Olympic athletes so far, and just doing personality stuff. Worked with the gold medal winningest woman in American sports history, which is Jenny Thompson, and have worked with a couple of other Olympians since.
So what type of equipment does a professional sports photographer use? I mean, I bet that a point-and-shoot doesn't really cut it.
Well, it's kind of funny. I shot with professional film cameras my entire career. I started with... I bought one of my original mentor, Seth Perlman. I bought one of his Nikons to start off with, and sort of stuck with the Nikon system throughout my professional career. And I started working in Photoshop with scans of my images years and years ago, like Photoshop 2.5.
Wow.
And then I progressed to, I decided I wanted to try and get a digital camera, so I ended up getting a Coolpix 990. Back in 2000.
No, that's a point and shoot.
Yeah, it's a point and shoot, and I really pushed the limits of that camera. It's a 3-megapixel camera. It's not meant for shooting sports. I ended up getting a couple of attachments for it, the fisheye that goes with it, and I think I got the telephoto that goes with it as well. And I would shoot that alongside my my film SLRs, both medium format and 35 millimeter.
Wow.
And found that I really liked it, and I loved the immediacy of it. It's like having a Polaroid of everything that you ever shot. It's immediate feedback. It was great. And it has its limitations. What I ended up doing was getting, there's a commercially available thing. It's like a loop that fits on the back on the LCD, so it makes it a little more SLR-like, called the ExtendaView.
Okay.
It's for your records, it's photosolve.com.
Okay.
It's a little thing that Velcros onto the back of the LCD that allows you to look at that like it's... for the people that don't have an electronic viewfinder or an SLR, it allows you to actually look at the viewfinder without having to hold it out, you know, like you're holding a video camera or something like that, because some people find that really awkward and really hard to follow action with that.
Oh, so you look through the viewfinder, not on the LCD with it, right?
Well, no, you actually look through... The LCD becomes sort of your viewfinder.
Ah, I see. Okay.
So it's like a little loop that goes on the back of it.
Now, one of the things that I think is quite difficult when using a point and shoot for sports photography, I imagine that getting that right moment, that very specific moment when something happens or someone is close to you, a skateboarder or whatever, and to get that right moment, I know that some point and shoots do have quite a significant shutter lag. They take a lot of time between pressing the shutter button and the exposure being taken. How did you counter that?
It's pretty easy, actually. If you're used to normally pre-composing and pre-focusing, it's the same type of an idea. Basically, you're going to point the camera at where you're going to be shooting and half press the button, and that locks in everything, so the minute you finish, like press the button all the way down, it'll fire. And there's almost no lag on just about any camera that I've tried that with. It gives you like a pretty immediate reaction. So you just have to, you know, sort of aim at whatever you're going to be shooting and press and hold the button halfway down. And then when the action gets there, then finish pressing the button and it takes the picture.
Cool. Yeah, that's... And then depending on how long the camera then takes, I think you can just get used to what your camera does there and compensate for that accordingly, right?
Yeah, it's almost knocks it down, because some of them are like, you know, 3 seconds between
exactly.
If you just press the button. You can get it down to under a half a second with the half press method.
Yeah, and I think with most newer point and shoots, that's not that much an issue anymore. I think those are getting significantly faster.
Yeah, they're getting pretty useful. And then, you know, for an SLR, you don't have that problem. I like the 990 so much that as soon as the Nikon D1X came out, I bought one. And that was the first time I really started using autofocus. I had used manual focus with my F4 and before. So I ended up buying a whole new set of lenses and just upgrading all my stuff to kind of go with that. Even bought a Nikon F100 film body just because the autofocus was so much better. And I think I put 20 rolls through that before I put it on eBay. digital was where it was at. With the 990, I really concentrated on learning not only to push the camera, but to push the images afterwards to get everything out of it I possibly could. And I think... to this day, that it's really not the camera, it's the person using it that makes the good picture. Content is key, resolution is great, but worry more about the content than about the about the equipment that you're making it with. I've taken my I've actually had images from my Coolpix camera used in like the Los Angeles Times and things like that, because I've taken that to Dodger games and done overall views of the stadium and things like that, and those images were completely usable for that kind of stuff. Just being careful with shooting it and processing it the right way and you know, just proper technique.
So you never actually had anyone ask you what equipment you're using, right?
I get that all the time.
I mean from publishers.
Oh, from publishers? The savvy ones can look at the EXIF info. right. The rest of them, they don't really care. I actually had to do a lot of work. I would go to assignments, like for ESPN, the first assignment I did digital for them. I shot film as well, and let me tell you, flying to the other coast and having to deal with hand-checking film and stuff was just not a good thing at all. I hate traveling with film.
I can imagine.
Just because of that. And I had to shoot film and digital just to be able to show them side by side that digital was a viable format. This was back in 2001. And a lot of people were very skeptical about it.
And you had some convincing to do there.
Yeah, I did. So most of the assignments that I shot after that, I would shoot film and digital and send them both and say, look, you know, just compare the two, see which one, you know, see if I can shoot the rest of them digital for you from now on. And I didn't have anybody say no after that.
That's good. So now are you, do you still take your point and shoot with you, or is it exclusively DSLR now?
Just depends on what I'm doing. Vacations, I always take just the point and shoot. Okay. Sometimes, depending on what I need, if I have to mount a camera on something and timing isn't so much of an issue, I'll take the point and shoot. I've used it with an intervalometer to shoot video stuff. An intervalometer. It shoots a picture every so many seconds,
okay.
For example. And so I did that for a video clip to go with a 24-hour radio control car article that we did.
Oh.
We actually ran a gas-powered radio control car for 24 hours, and I was there to cover the article for the magazine and to I set up the point and shoot actually as sort of a time lapse thing.
Wow.
So, but I've used it as a backup. You know, I've got 3 digital SLR bodies now, and I use the point and shoot still. It carries easily and it can do a really good job.
So what type of events, or let's say, what's the biggest event that you usually shoot?
Well, I just got finished with the X Games, which is the big ESPN extreme sports final event of the year kind of thing. They offer a lot of prize money. It's all the top people in the world. Tony Hawk used to do it when he was still competing. He still shows up to be a commentator. You've got guys like Dave Mira and Jamie Bestwick and Pierre-Luc Gagnon and those kind of guys that show up for this. It's the best of the best of the extreme sports world. Skateboarding, BMX, motocross, all that stuff.
And you're there to shoot the pictures. Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that sometimes also dangerous? I mean, I've looked on your website, and some of those shots look like you've been awfully close to the action.
I am. I get in there really close. With a fisheye, you can be inches away from the guys, and I've had more cameras broken than most people will ever own. Nikon Repair thinks that my middle name is Impact Damage, actually. most of those guys, most of the top pros, you can really trust them up that close. When I'm shooting with a fisheye, I have my eye to the camera most of the time. I'm not one of these guys that holds it out at arm's length and hopes I get the shot. I really want to concentrate on the exact composition. So it's tough shooting with a fisheye sometimes because you have to be so close to the action. You really have to trust the rider to not hit you. And the pros are the ones that you can really count to be that they are very consistent. You go to your local skate park and you're probably going to get hit.
So you've got lots of cameras broken. That's actually pretty funny. I mean, I can really imagine that you being there and some bikes smashing into the camera. Did you ever get hurt?
So far, I was just thinking about that. I really haven't been. I got really close once. I've been hit in the head with a couple of skateboards and things like that because I was looking through the lens and not. Sometimes I don't keep both eyes open,
okay.
Which I really need to. But otherwise, I had a bike come in, and a guy jumped off of his bike halfway through a trick on a set of jumps. And I looked up and saw his bike full frame, upside down, coming at me, which with a fisheye means that it was already right on top of me.
Did you get the picture?
I got the picture, and I ducked out of the way just in time. The handlebar actually smashed my flash. I had a flash on top of the camera. It smashed that off and ripped the prism off of the camera.
Ouch.
And fortunately, I was looking through the viewfinder and got my head out of the way just, I mean, I've seen the video clip of this. I almost lost an eye from that.
Oh, no. So, but did you get the actual shot with a bike without the rider getting closer?
Yeah.
Really?
I did.
Oh, my.
I did.
Oh, boy.
But I've done crazy stuff. Like, I was shooting Pete Lunkarevich, and he's a great downhill mountain bike guy, former BMX racer, too. And I had him jumping over me a dozen times or so with my head wedged between two rocks with his back tire probably 2 inches above my lens.
Ooh, that sounds dangerous.
Just getting a good shot of the bottom side of him going over me. It was for Van's ad.
I think I'll stay with plants and birds and things. Inanimate objects. I think that's a lot less dangerous. I want to keep my limbs and eyes and things and my camera.
Yeah. Well, it's all what you're into. I mean, I think anybody that shoots sports really well, anything that they shoot, football or what we call football, what you guys probably call, what you call football is what we call soccer.
Yes.
But anybody that shoots any sport really well, those guys tend to really be into those sports. And it's the same thing for me. I've shot a lot of books on these various sports, and I participate in all of them. I've got a 38-pound camera bag that I've been snowboarding with. Following a guy down a hill to get some good shots for a book. And it's what you do, and you have to be into those sports, I think, to portray them properly, to give the viewer of the image the sense of what it feels like to actually do that sport.
Well, I think it definitely adds a touch of authenticity there.
Yeah, it definitely does.
So I've seen a lot of wide angle and fisheye pictures on your website. What's the reason why you use that?
Well, I like to be able to give in a single image a sense of the whole event. So to be able to get the ramp, to get the crowds, to get everything that's going on. Usually, these athletes like to be able to be pictured, up in the air doing what they're doing, but they also want to have a picture of where they came from, where the takeoff point was. It tells the story a lot better than a really tight, most newspaper photographers that shoot these sports shoot them with a 400-millimeter lens and just isolate the rider, and he may be an inch off the ground for all you can tell from the picture. These guys want you to know that they're 8 feet above the coping of the ramp and just really going for it, and it's nice to be able to get the whole crowd, to get the whole event in there, to be able to do that and not have the rider tiny. You have to use a wide-angle lens and get really close to them, so they can be big in the picture, and you still have a whole lot of background.
Ah, I see. And that having that takeoff and landing point included in the picture, I think really adds to the completeness, to the feeling of completeness there.
Yeah, I mean, you want to know how high they really are. You want to know what they're going through when they're doing it, and just have a feeling of how amazing that must feel to be up there doing whatever that is.
Well, I think talking about your website, I think we should plug it here, which I definitely should. So,
thanks.
Everyone who listens to this, Tony Donaldson, tdphoto.com, tdphoto.com is Tony's website. Go check out the pictures. There's really some amazing stuff out there.
Thanks.
So, let's see. Any last words? I think we're bringing this to a close here, just to not get the show too long.
Sure.
Any cool things that have happened to you, or anything you would like to let the listeners know about?
I've been lucky to do what I do. I worked for a lot of different magazines for years, and then about 9 years ago, I took off on my own, and I've been freelancing ever since. I'm very lucky to do what I do, and feel very blessed for that, and just work with amazing people all the time. I mean, I'm friends with all the people that I sort of idolized growing up and everything else, and I don't think there's anything else that could beat that. And I think one thing that I'd like to tell everybody to do is just, you know, go after, whether you're going to go after photography as a vocation or as an avocation, just go out there and shoot a lot and get good at the technique so that you can create, you know, what your mind sees, and spend a lot more time working on creating great images than worrying about what you're using to create them with.
Cool. I think that's just perfect closing words. Tony, thank you so much for being on the show. It was really interesting and dangerous.
My pleasure, Chris. And if I can do anything else to help you, let me know.
And that was Tips from the Top Floor with a very, very dangerous vacation special number 3 about extreme sports photography.
You won't talk about this, you won't talk about that, you won't say where it's at. I try to figure it out, but you're...
Check back next week for interview number 4 out of 4, which means I'll be back with my regular schedule of shorter shows 3 times a week pretty soon.
You better let me know. I remember.
Well, this time, let's do the happy shooting thing together, just for the fun of it, okay? On 3. 1, 2, 3. Happy shooting!
It ain't as easy as it seems.